Jump into the epic world of Avatar: The Last Airbender
with Nickelodeon's official companion podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements on Apple Podcasts
or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
What's up, Ears Edition listener? It's Ronnie Chang, correspondent for The Daily Show. You're about to hear an episode of one of our original Daily Show podcasts, Beyond the Scenes, hosted by Roy Wood Jr. It's the podcast where we dive deep into segments and topics from The Daily Show with the show's writers, producers, and experts. In this episode, Leslie Jones reflects on her week as Daily Show host. She's joined by her co-host of the Fuckery podcast, Lenny Marcus. They discuss how SNL prepared her for The Daily Show, what advice Chris Rock gave her before starting the role, why she wanted to tackle men's mental health, and the backstory she created for each of The Daily Show correspondents. If you like the show, check out the Beyond the Scenes podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Beyond the Scenes, the podcast that goes beyond the scenes of topics and segments that aired originally on The Daily Show. I'm your host, Roy Wood Jr. Very special episode today. And when I say special, first off, if you're watching the video of this, you can see we're in our new multi-million dollar podcast facility right here in the heart of The Daily Show studios. I could tell you where we are, but then I'd have to kill you. Here's what this podcast is like. This is what you have to think of this podcast as. This podcast is like, you know, in school, you got your school teacher who give you the information. That's The Daily Show. This podcast is the substitute teacher who comes in and go, yo, y'all ain't got to do none of that shit that they was talking about today. We willing in the TV and we about to watch Faces of Death and a couple R-rated movies. And I don't know if that analogy completely connects. Joining me today, though, are two wonderful, wonderful guests. First up, he is one of the co-hosts of the Fuckery podcast. I don't know if I'm supposed to add that U in there because I know that y'all, like, for search engine optimization, you can't spell fuckery all the way out. So the fuckery.
It's still pronounced like that.
The fuckery.
No. The fuckery.
The fuckery.
Yes.
He is a acclaimed stand-up comedian and writer, Lenny Marcus. Lenny, how you doing?
Thanks, man? Roy. Thanks for having me. We took out the vowels for the kids, but we still pronounce it.
Fair enough.
For the kids. It's for the kids.
And that voice you hear is a wonderful, wonderful stand-up comedian, or do we just do comedian, an SNL alum, but more importantly, for the sake of this podcast, she was the first guest host of The Daily Show when we came back after Trevor Noah's departure. And y'all know her also as a co-host of the Fuckery podcast, Leslie Jones. Jeez.
Nice, nice. See, I used to hate comedian. Now I actually like it.
Why?
I don't know. I think you earn it.
Wait.
Oh, that's interesting.
You earn comedian or you earn comedienne?
Comedienne.
Yeah, it's like a little acoustic crown
right
on top of it.
Because you can just say you're a comic. You know what I'm saying? You know.
Yeah, but comedienne.
Fine. Comedienne is
fine.
Just something else.
So when
else.
You call me a pain in the ass, from now on, call me a pain in the ass.
You know what?
Yeah.
What I'm going to do is violently attack you first, and then I'm going to say all of that other
And
shit.
That chemistry that you see between these two right now, that is what they have been for years. These two are also, what do I call y'all? Is it writing partners? Is it producing partners? Because you do so many projects together, and I know that there's a lot of what Leslie touches that Lenny Marcus's fingerprints are on, and Les, I know it's vice versa. So it's like, because I don't know if it's a writing duo. I don't know what the hell y'all are. All I know is that when you two are together, it is magic. And when you came into this whole situation, well, first off, give us a little bit of the backstory, Les, of how you and Lenny met. Because it's important that people understand your dynamic and then how that dynamic came into The Daily Show. Because I'm telling y'all, you two are some shit we ain't never had in this building. I've been here 7 years.
Wow. That makes me emotional. I'm going to be honest. That makes me a little emotional inside. You know, I always had a vision of my career because that's just, you know, Virgo is just like that. I always knew what type of steps I wanted to take. And when I got good enough, I was like, if I get a writer, I want to be like one of those writing teams that's like, you know, that like when we go down in time, they'd be like, you know, these two people wrote together and they created this, and this. And I had that idea in my mind. And when you really try to force an idea, you end up either force it or either you think it and you have to go through what it takes to actually get that type of partnerships. Like I've had a lot of people that I've wrote with and it didn't work out, or insecure. It just didn't vibe. And to find Lenny, and it's so crazy that everything that I used to fantasize about, I used to fantasize having this writing partner and we would just be like writing everything together, doing everything together, doing all the jokes together, write movies and stuff, and it's like to hear you say that, it just, it's like, oh shit, like the fucking dream. People need to understand the dream that you have don't go through the fucking path that you think it's gonna go through. It's like a circuit. It's like you make the wish and then it goes out there and finds its path to you. So it could be anything. It could happen any type of way. Me and Lenny met at the Cellar. I came in there one night.
Comedy Cellar, in New York City.
Yeah, Comedy Cellar. I think I came in there one night. He was sitting at the table, and I think people were. This is how I remember, but Lenny's going to tell probably because Lenny doesn't smoke weed. But this is the fragments of the story that I remember, is that he was sitting there and they was ragging him about him marrying his girl. And I was like, oh, what is your girl? And
only comedians will attack you for being in love.
Yeah.
Well, they was just ragging him. They was ragging him and saying, yo, you should marry her. Like, she's hot and woo-woo-woo. And I think he showed me a picture. And I was like, oh, yeah, motherfucker, you stupid. Like, marry her or whatever, right? And then I think I left a year, came back the next year. They had gotten married. I performed. And Lenny came down and gave me some notes. He was like, yo, you know, these are some good, you know, tags. I got some tags to your jokes. And I was like, oh, yeah, let's go around the corner and do them. And he was like right now? And I was like, yeah, fuck that. Let's go. Like, and we went around and I was like, I think it was like, shit, maybe like at least seven of them fucking hit. I think it was like all of them hit. I was like, oh, shit, this dude, like, and then you. I saw his set and I was like, oh, fuck, this motherfucker's hilarious. And then we went to a Yankee game and I'm telling you, Roy, I didn't fuck with baseball before Lenny. We sat there and Lenny made me love baseball. And I'm telling you, me and my assistant was laughing like nonstop. Like it was so, like he was saying funny shit that was just like so grown. It grown jokes. Like I've hung around people before. You know what I'm saying? I've hung around people before and they'd be silly and you go, haha, I gotta laugh at that goofy shit. You know, woo-woo. But Lenny was grown. So that's.
And for the people who don't understand comedy, Lenny.
Yeah.
What you did that night at the Comedy Cellar,
yeah,
is fucking insane.
Yes.
You could have got cussed, yeah, the hell out.
I was waiting, mm-hmm, to get cussed out.
Because,
yep,
just so I could describe you to the people. We all know, you know, Leslie Jones, 6'3", 6'4"-ish.
6'1", people. Jesus.
Lenny looks how he sounds.
250.
Lenny's taller than me.
Just that's a nice, hilarious, polite.
But you know what was so crazy, Roy, is that he wrote the jokes down so precisely, and I was like, this motherfucker's a nerd too. And it's like, fucking love nerds.
See, and that connects to the Daily Show. Okay, so Lenny, yeah, how much of Leslie's story?
It might be a little out of order, but it's close enough. And I'll take it. And because when she tells it every time, it kind of changes, like the events change every time and the order changes. Yeah, yeah. But it's pretty close. And yeah, she took me to this Yankee game and you don't want to give lines to somebody coming off stage, right? You know,
correct.
They're not in the space,
hey,
whatever.
Here's how to do your job, yeah, better, 20-year veteran.
Yeah. Right. I got to know that person really well. But she took me to this Yankee game. I don't think you know those seats, Roy. They're right behind home plate.
Oh,
they're
Lorne Michaels seats.
The Lorne Michaels seats.
Oh, yes.
Seriously, that's, you know how she says the circuit comes to you and the whole thing, that whole mess, which she was talking about circuitry and, yeah, spirituality. No, that's not me.
I'm like, mess.
I was just like, one day I'm going to sit in those fucking seats. And she's like, hey, you want to go to a game? I was like, I know those seats. And it's happening right in real time.
So you manifested the seats, and she manifested a writing part.
That's, yeah, right.
Holy shit.
Is that correct? So I manifested the seats. So I get to the seats. I am, a tear is like rolling down my eye. And I'm like, how do I pay this woman back for this? And the only way I could think of, you know what? I'll stick my head in. I'll watch the set. And if I have anything to say, you know, maybe I'll just say hi, you know?
Wow.
And I go in and watch the set. I'm like, I think she's got a lot of stuff here. And so I started taking out a pen and started writing stuff real quick. I wrote like 10 things down. She comes off and I'm waiting for the punch in the face, Roy. I say, I literally had to say, hey, I know it's going to sound, hey, good. She's like, hey, good to see you. I go, do you want a couple of lines maybe? And she's like, I was waiting for her. Get the fuck out of my face. No, she goes, yeah. I'm like, really? She goes, yeah.
You all meet, you go to the baseball games, you have this wonderful journey over the next 7-8 years of just making dope ass content, right? When you get the call for The Daily Show, and Lenny being the wordsmith, and I would say, Les, you are probably a little more jazz comedically, and I don't say that as an insult.
Oh, no.
You're very much, you have an idea, you play around with it, but in TV, you have the constraints of time. Now, you also know what you want to say, but you're trying to figure out the funniest way to say it. What was your expectations? What was your approach? What was you all's plans? Because you're also, you also have the burden of being the first person to guest host it. Man. You're the first person to come back to kick down the doors to reestablish this brand. This is a 25-year brand, dog.
Well, first of all, Lenny, the first time Lenny saw me on the road, Roy, I did an hour and 20 minutes. You know how black comics do, right? And I really thought I was the shit. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to come off stage and Lenny's going to be like, oh, wow, I didn't know that you was walking Messiah. You know, I literally, that's how cocky I was like, oh, yeah, he's going to be like, I don't know why comedians should hail you. They should make a statue out of you. So I come off stage and I'm sweating and shit, just knowing I ripped. And Lenny was like, what the fuck was that? He was like, why the fuck you ain't get off stage at 58 minutes? What the fuck? Nobody wants to see you after 58 minutes. He was like, you said motherfucker like 72. What the fuck? Like, he went off on me. Like, off on me. Wow. So
slightly hyperbolic.
That's what it felt like. Cause I was laughing. I was like, no, this motherfucker ain't telling me.
What else did I do?
I was like, this motherfucker ain't telling me. I know the fuck. I've been doing comedy woo woo woo. But see, one thing that I will admit about myself that I've always admitted to people is that I am a wild bucking horse. Like, I'm not afraid to kick the fucking French thing down and run in the field. I'm not afraid to buck off a motherfucker that I don't want on me. I will jump feet first from the building. That's who the fuck I am, you know? So Lenny is the guy who is the lion tamer. That's what I call him. I call him the lion tamer. He knows what I am, and then he'll put it down and go, stick to this. Like, this is the script. Stick to this.
And that's an important dynamic, because the thing about The Daily Show is that the structure of the show, mm-hmm. we also don't have a lot of time. The morning meetings at 9, rehearsals at 3. You don't have a lot of time. So you have to figure out very stickily how you want to do stuff. So, Lenny, when you come into the building, and I feel like you having that more of a sense of structure, but you also don't want to lose. We don't want to lose what Leslie does.
Right.
What did you anticipate coming into this? Like, what did you heard about the show? What did you hear about
the writers? I know, like, the show. It's a brilliant show. I know. I watched it when John did it. You could tell how funny the writing staff is. They get mm-hmm. it. And my expectations were pretty high. And I was like, can we meet your level of expectations? Because, you know, she doesn't do a lot of prompter work. There's a lot of prompter work in that. She doesn't do, you know, like, we've worked with other production companies before that we didn't like. So anytime you go into a new arena, there's so much to happen within, you know, getting to know people and working with people. And then, you know, she's got to do, like, with the correspondence, you got to do, like, a two-person thing here. So there was a lot coming in. I was like, wow, this is a lot of bells and whistles. But with her, there's always two things at play. One is, she's going to bring everything. She is bringing way more than you. A bomb is coming in. You guys don't even know that this explosion's about to go off. When I come in, I'm thinking, okay, just, I have to let her do that thing. Let her explode with the talent and let me just figure out how to make it all work around
and
her.
That's what that staff did. And, you know, SNL, of course, my experience doing the updates with SNL was very helpful
as Colin far Jost as like being behind,
being behind this desk. And he's right. We didn't have prompters. We had cue cards. So whenever you do the prompter, you got to get that person on the same rhythm as you. And I always feel stupid when I read out loud. So I always try to memorize a lot of stuff. So I try to tell them not to change too much. But I try to memorize a lot because I don't like to look like I'm reading. And it's just it was a lot of shit. It was a lot of shit. But I'm going to tell you that fucking writing staff, that crew, it's so much different than anything I've ever experienced. It was the first time I was able to come in and actually be talented. I didn't have to write. I didn't have to direct. I didn't have to point. I didn't have to do none of that shit.
You did write. You wrote for yourself. We could lay it out for her and then she'll Leslie-ify it. You know what I mean?
Can I ask to a degree how your preparation differed for SNL versus The Daily Show?
Oh, okay, well, y'all both have that schedule. But what I would say for The Daily Show is
SNL, everybody I know from SNL, they be texting me at 3:30 in the morning on a weeknight, talking about headed home. I'm like, bitch, I've been in the bed.
Yeah. I'm saying for the day of show, it's like okay, blah, blah, blah.
To be fair, SNL, your day starts at like 3:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, and then the SNL is 6 days a week. 6 days a week, it's 6 days a motherfucking week. We only get Sunday off, and they give you the thing of like mentally, like you need to forget last week. It don't matter what the fuck happened to you. You need to forget last week. And it's a brutal hard. It's a hard. Like, I didn't feel that at The Daily Show. I didn't feel like it was such a hard schedule to where I'm just like, okay, I'm going to die. Like, we was home every night by 8.
Yeah, it's very efficient here. I don't even know if you guys appreciate how efficient, because
I don't
been
think
to
that y'all
places.
Even understand how efficient y'all are.
They waste resources. Nobody knows what's up. You know? Yeah. But here, everybody seems to know everything. You know, it is a tight ship.
I would say the experience at the desk and learning how to cut jokes and stuff, I think SNL got me prepared a little bit for The Daily Show for that, because it was so easy. Like, I think Jen was like so surprised every time she would come up and go, okay, so we're gonna cut this and then we're gonna put this, and I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. And she would be like, okay, so
yeah, because people get attached to jokes. I think it's funny.
And we've been there, Joe Roy.
Gotta understand.
I've had jokes that people be like, I'll be like, I'm retiring this joke. It's like, what, you gonna put it in a glass thing, like on top of your fucking on your wall or some shit? Like, you know, jokes be like baby stuff. When I first started SNL and they was cutting them jokes, I was like, you're killing me. But then you start loving the cut. The cut is like. Clean.
Jokes are not your children. They're your stepchildren. You ain't got to love them but a little while.
For a little while. And then, they're not even your stepchildren. They just kind of like you said, the substitute teacher. These motherfuckers, you don't have to see these motherfuckers tomorrow if you don't really want to.
You guys also write. I mean, the writing here is so strong that if you cut something, it's like, great. You already have 10 killers beforehand.
So. And y'all wrote for me. Yeah. Like, y'all wrote for me. Like, not at me.
Okay, so then to that point, the topics that were thrown at you during your week, you came on the same week of the Martin Luther King dick statue in Boston. Wait, mm-hmm. From a certain angle, it looked like a dick. It wasn't actually Martin Luther King.
No, it looks like he's going down.
Stephen A. Smith versus Rihanna. George Santos was in the mix. What did you all discuss, the two of you internally, in terms of what you wanted to say specifically? Because the show is giving you a little bit of range of going, okay, this is your chance to say whatever you want to say to America. But then, what did you want to say specifically? And also, was there any type of you like, I can't get into that right now.
Well, like Martin Luther King, when it came up on the board and we went through it, I go, that is in. I don't care what happens in the other room. Trust me, she's going to love this story. That's one of the final 7, trust me. And then she takes one look at us. She's like, yep. You know, so I kind of know what she's going to like. I can get us in the, I'll get us in the stadium and very close to the seats, you know, get us in the seat. And then she'll take it and say, yeah, I like that one. And it's easier for you guys if I just do that. And she can sleep.
Bro, whenever I'm doing stuff like that, which has been like the nemesis of the core of what I've been trying to do on stage and everywhere with my comedy, I want to actually say what needs to be said to you, but still make you laugh about it. Yeah. Does that make sense? Like, this is some horrible shit. Like, our job as comedians is to make you laugh. You know what I'm saying? But it's also to be very real and honest, like to take that real and honest shit and really make it funny. You know, how can I explain it? Like, whenever I talk about somebody in the audience, I try to make them laugh harder than everybody else. Like, I'll be talking about them, but I'll be making them laugh at themselves harder than everybody else. The only time that I hit a person so hard is if they're doing some fucked up shit, like, or, you know, cackling me or whatever. But most of the time, I'll start hard on you, and by the end of it, you'll love me because I've made you laugh about yourself. And you take a joke, now you take a joke to work, and you go, man, the comedian last night, he really got me. He said that, and I so do that. This is what I tell you. Oh, those comics, they're, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. He's part of the, like, the I like brutal ass whoopings, but I like them to be ass whoopings that make sense.
It's part of her talent for sure. That's God-given in some ways, like what she's saying. And a lot of comics don't figure that out. And she does it in a really fun way a lot of the times. But we also, she definitely keeps her ear to the ground, you know, to the ground of issues that happen in the world. So we've been trying to write this bit for her in her act about men's mental health. And so we've been talking about this a lot on the podcast, whatever. And when we came in here, they're like, hey, is there any long piece you want to do? And immediately she's like, I want to address men's mental health. And because that doesn't get addressed. So little topics like that, like just whatever we're going through in our lives in that specific time, it bugs her for weeks, you know, and months. And Mia's like, yeah, they should get help. I'm done, you know, but she will stick to this. And then when we come in and we get it, we have this huge, amazing, brilliant writing staff that will help her make what she just said. It's not done in a mean way. It's done in a helpful way and a really funny way. And the two of us were just blown away with, yeah, this is what we've dreamed of for her. You know, a writing staff that's really bright and can actually play tennis with her, hit the ball back over the net, you know. Other writing staffs that we've worked with or anything, they wouldn't have the first idea what to do. And everybody here was psyched when she said that. They're like, yes.
Well, after the break, I want to talk a little bit about you thirsting over Moist Chestnut Ass.
baby, let's talk it.
We got to talk a little bit about you and the guests. We're going to talk a little bit more about Leslie Jones, the first guest host on The Daily Show to start 2023. This is Beyond the Scenes. We'll be right back.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements on Apple Podcasts
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beyond the Scenes, we are back. Lenny Marcus and Leslie Jones of the Fuckery Podcast, and also part of the team. You're now in Daily Show history. You're now part of the IMDb page. Do we technically call you the first black woman to host a Daily Show? I feel like you're black history now. I feel like you get a stamp.
Oh, shit. Am I the first black
woman? I am trying to think of anyone, even in a guest host capacity, and unless Jessica Williams did it, I can't think of another person.
Wow. Finally, I'm the first to do some shit.
Yeah. We're going to put that in the history books and Ron DeSantis will take it out. Let's talk a little bit about the guests.
Yep.
Now, you had Charlamagne the God. You had Morris Chestnut. You had Alexis McGill Johnson, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood.
Yep.
When it came to preparing for these conversations, like Planned Parenthood, that's not a light conversation. You can make it funny, but the issues that they're addressing with women's reproductive rights is a very serious issue. Did you all, because like Charlamagne, not Morris Chestnut, we already know what it is. You was just trying to keep from coming across.
See it in person. And my titties was in his face.
Singing.
We're going to edit that out because Morris Chestnut's wife might be listening.
I'm sorry, Morris Chestnut's wife, no. That's like having a chocolate cake on the counter and going,
not
people
there.
Don't like that cake.
What was the balance of serious to silly that you all, that you know, Leslie, that you and Lenny sat down and decided on with your approach to the interviews? Because I find interviewing to be, to me, I don't think it's anything that everyone can do, but mm-hmm. I think that an interview is only as good as the curiosities of the host. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And that's where she comes
and
in.
That's
she
where,
is
Arsenio
curious.
Hall, Arsenio Hall 101. That's the way you interview somebody. You interview them like everybody at home is thinking the same question. Everybody at home. Everybody at home, it's like, you know, you make those questions like, that's what I would have asked him. That's what I would have asked him. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then two, having like some actual interest in what's going on. Like, you know, Morris Chestnut been around forever, son. Like, and I don't think nobody really ever given him flowers like he should get. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, he's been
30-year vet minimum.
Still working hard, always on the show, and always looking good. So I just, and I don't think people give enough credit to beautiful black men like that. I just don't think they get a lot of credit.
But also positive, scandal-free.
Right, yes.
No drama on Morris Chestnut.
Yes, jacket. Yes. And then what he did for that, the best man, that role that he played, it's great. I thought that needed to be, I wanted that to be my first show. For the Planned Parenthood, Lenny will tell you, it's another subject that I'm always talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm always talking about Planned Parenthood because people don't understand women and their bodies. You men, you will never fucking understand. This is a whole factory going on over here. We understand that you got a dick and you got semen and all that bullshit to deal with, but we got a literal baby making machine inside of us. Like those things, if they stink. You're not around for that. You just around to take our shit away instead of being around to help us clean up the stadium. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I don't understand.
You just want to show up and play.
Yeah. Like, I give this example all the time. Truck drivers come to the factory. They drop the shit off and they get the fuck out the factory. They don't stay and try to run the factory. No, they don't. They get the fuck out. They go to the next factory.
With elected Republicans being the truck drivers in this equation.
Basically.
Okay.
You know, yep. I'm just saying.
That's right. He's right. That's exactly what you're trying to say.
What I've been finding too, Roy, is such obviousness that I am smart and grown. I didn't know a lot of people ain't smart and grown. Like, I didn't know that men didn't know that you can go to Planned Parenthood. Do you know how many men didn't know that they were allowed to go to Planned Parenthood and that it's for men? So that was the real angle I wanted to take, because I was like, if y'all know it's for y'all too, maybe y'all wouldn't be so quick to fucking X out our shit. You know what I'm saying? It was very personal.
We've talked about this. She had mentioned somewhere along the line, like, people don't even know. It's like people think it's an abortion. That's it.
Yeah.
And they don't even know the services. So literally the first question I was asking, and I have it on my paper, is what other services do you provide? And like, let's ask that first.
Let's get that. I mean, let's say the obvious things. Like people, we think that everybody know everything.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know shit.
Right.
Like these are the, so a lot of Planned Parenthoods don't even give abortions. And the ones that do give abortions, they also give vasectomies. They also do other medical shit. Like the one that's in fucking Brooklyn, in New York, Brooklyn, was my motherfucking gym. Like I could go there when I was actually sick. Like that was a hospital. That Planned Parenthood there is fucking incredible. So it's like people don't know that shit.
And she's had experience with this. So not only
all
that, but she's
life.
Given it money.
Planned Parenthood saved my fucking
life. In her
life.
Will, this stuff.
In my will. I'm leaving them in my trust. That's how much I think Planned Parenthood.
So as far as a guest go, that's a slam dunk. And then,
you know,
and then Charlamagne was, the she's mental, been talking about mental health. Like we have a guy and he was terrific.
Men need therapy. I don't give a fuck. And me and Lenny talk about it. Lenny always rolls his eyes when I say this
shit. I don't roll my eyes.
You do. You fucking roll your eyes. Like when guys go into a fucking appointment, and I'm saying this to male doctors, to you, for you to say to your male patients, one of your questions, like when you said this to Lenny, one of your questions should be, hey, how are you doing mentally?
Yeah. Yes.
Hey, how are you feeling mentally?
That is correct.
Do you get what I'm saying? I mean, that's nothing wrong with
that. But
like, because
doctors don't care.
Yeah, but they're supposed to.
They're supposed
and that's
to.
The
She's
fucking
right.
problem.
Supposed to.
They're supposed to. Because if a woman came into that doctor, that same doctor, and acting up, they would be like, how's your mental? Do you get what I'm saying?
It's always, you crazy, Heifer? What's going on?
No, that's real fucking talk, though, Roy. Why I did that piece was, I honestly, and I tell Lenny this all the time, I always look on the other side of the joke. You know, I always look on the other side of shit. Like, men literally are fucking going through it. Like, y'all motherfuckers are going through it. And honestly, I don't think that you have been given the permission to get help for that. Whenever I say it to Lenny, or when I say it to another man, the first thing men think is like, I'm not crazy. No, this has nothing to do with you being crazy. This has to do with you being able to talk about what the fuck is going on with you, just like for a woman. Mm. You know, I really don't think men understand that women do understand what you motherfuckers are going through. Like, you are going through it. Like, just to be put into this story that we have of the prince and the damsel in distress, and then you're supposed to save the women, and then you're supposed to be the man of the house, and you're supposed to be so God and damn masculine. That's a fucking lot.
Without the dance.
But do you get what the fuck I'm saying? See, you can't even dance. You can't even dance.
But do you get what I'm saying?
Like,
yes.
I honestly feel like if we start putting that out there more, that I think that dudes would fucking be like, yeah, maybe I need to go, you know, take care of that.
But he was great. That was the point.
Charlamagne was surprisingly great, because I thought he was going to be mean. I really did thought it was going to be mean. I don't know
why. You've never met him? I thought you've done Breakfast Club.
I think I maybe met him in other places, but I always see those clips, and I'd be like, oh, I don't want to argue with Charlamagne because I don't want that to happen. Nah. I thought that was going to be like that. But he was actually fucking awesome.
To me, Breakfast Club Charlamagne is different from any other show Charlamagne, especially if you're talking about mental health, which he done wrote two books on the shit. Mm-hmm. So that's his ministry.
Yep.
Yeah. So I love what he was going to come in
on some dope shit anyway. So from the conversations you've had with the guests, let's switch over to the conversations you had with the correspondents. Now, setting up those chats, because now you're dealing with different personalities in a way.
Sorry, she doesn't understand. Roy, Desi,
okay, because I was like,
Dulce.
Who the fuck is
that? The sidekick, you know us.
Y'all call correspondents?
Yes, because in the real news world, the motherfucker that lead the building is called
correspondents. I thought that's just called
co-stars. No, that's for like other shows.
You're on a fake nude show. Yes. Play along.
Listen, reporter. Listen, you act like I watch news.
You reporter. Do watch the news.
Damn,
I
you
watch
don't.
It in a different
way. The
way
you be yelling at MSNBC
and CNN.
But I
didn't know that they was called correspondents. I just said people up on the screen.
You ain't never read the shit at the bottom when the motherfuckers
show up.
Don't
say correspondent.
See what I'm dealing with, Roy?
They always say minister Farrakhan, or they say
representative. Executive director, CEO of the
exactly.
coalition.
They don't say correspondent. Okay, so now I know, correspondent.
So in preparing the desk chats, Lenny, let me talk to Lenny since
Please,
you know
God.
What the fuck
no,
I do.
No, talk to me,
no,
Roy.
Talk to Lenny. How were you trying to figure out the dynamic of how Leslie would navigate those? Because for the people who don't know, you know, it's the fake live hit of the reporter out on the location. Yeah.
This was important to me personally. I don't know if Leslie and I kind of went through it, but I definitely had an idea coming in what I wanted Leslie to have relations. She knows you for years. I know you for years, right? Mm-hmm. We don't know who Desi, but what if we did know them? What if Leslie has been doing this? Like, what if she had another level of this where she had a relationship with
him? And I helped him with this, too.
Yes, she did help.
Listen,
this is me
listen,
suggesting.
Are you erasing the black woman?
Listen. No, Roy, it's always, I always like to make up a whole story of what the fuck is going on, like, with me and the person. So with Desi, I was just like, that's the sis. Let that bitch go. Like, I was just, because they had us going back and forth, and I was like, absolutely not. Let me come in, say what I need to do, and then let Desi do her thing, because I want the sister to have the desk. Bam, there it is, right?
Dulce, so,
Dulce. The first chat was Dulce.
Yeah. Dulce, I'm
Dulce
sorry.
Dulce was the first chat.
My bad. Dulce came Dulce. In. And then with Desi, I really just wanted to treat her like this little silly white girl that's my friend that I really want to help,
and
this white girl.
She wants to help her.
I want to help you so
that
much because
idea.
You really are in trouble.
Well, we have
that. That was his idea. That was his
we
idea.
Have a friend that we did this on Supermarket
yeah.
Street. And she's,
yeah.
And Desi's very similar. So I was like,
very
try.
Similar to
and
her.
We couldn't do it in that short of time. But I'm like, Leslie, what if you could actually try and help her during
yeah.
the show? And
now, with Costa, Costa was yeah. like, I wanted opposite Colin.
Yes.
I knew, because the first thing that people do is go, oh, you're going to be in love with the white dude. No,
nope.
I want
yeah.
this to be a hate, but I don't want it to be because we fucked around. I want it to be because he fucked one of my homegirls.
Yeah,
and then me
the
knowing Costa,
yeah.
yeah, and me knowing Costa and knowing how, like, arrogant, like, not arrogant, he's not arrogant, but he's just like.
His comedy presence is a little bit.
He's fucking Mike Costa. Like, yeah. you can.
Because y'all have, y'all go back to the LA clubs. You and Costa
yeah,
have history
I feel like,
pre-Daily Show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to treat him, but I want it to be not to where we hate Costa. I want Costa to have a rope of like, no, the bitch he was fucking with was crazy too. So like, why is Costa the way he is? Because he's fucked with bitches like this. Does that make sense? So
correct.
Like, it's a whole story.
It's a whole story.
And
yeah.
we're friends. Like, because it's like, I wouldn't be mad at him if we weren't friends.
Let's just talk about the eggs, okay? Because as I was saying, the shortage is severe. But if you look closely, you'll find that it's not all it's cracked up to be.
You so f***ing corny, Costa. You know she was gonna break up with you because you a corny motherfucker, right? You know that, right?
Look, I'm trying to be a good sport here. I came all the way out here to this farm that you sent me to. I got feathers all over my suit. It stinks.
You know what? You know what? I'll tell you what stinks. My girl had to go to therapy after you.
Yeah, because she has multiple personality disorder.
Yeah, that's what we loved about her. She's like 10 friends in one.
After the break, I want to bring it home. I want to talk a little bit about mentorship and what advice you got from people outside of The Daily Show about your journey into guest hosting The Daily Show. Rounding third and headed for home with Leslie Jones and Lenny Marcus. This is Beyond the Scenes. We'll be right back.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Korra on The Legend of Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Zuko on The Last Airbender and General Iroh on The Legend of Korra. Each week, we'll recap and discuss another episode of The Last Airbender.
I don't know if we've ever talked about it, but...
Amazing guests stop by, from creators to cast to superfans to chat all things Avatarverse.
Are we saying that this is possible in the Avatar universe?
Varney, we gotta spread the word. Now fans can also check out our weekly video pods, too, by subscribing to the official Avatar YouTube channel.
That's a lot of fire, isn't it?
That's right, we're on video this season, everybody! So, whether you're a superfan with encyclopedic knowledge or you're brand new to this incredible world,
it's Fire Nation time, Book of Fire. Let's go! Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements on Apple Podcasts
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beyond the Scenes, we are bringing it to a close here. A wonderful conversation with the first guest host of 2023 on the new Daily Show, Leslie Jones, and her partner.
Like
that's my NPR voice. You like
I
my
like
that.
No,
good.
But I like the whole yes. introduction. Well, the know, first.
You have a great ease behind the microphone, for sure.
You know, this young woman is... going to talk a little bit with Leslie Jones about her struggles and her time in the ghetto.
Oh,
and,
man, that would put me to sleep.
Man,
oh, well.
You got to tell them when we was in Alabama and you took me to this comedy. Man, that was one of them one times when I was like, thank God I am a comic. Like, and I'm not scared to do this. Like, you
the
know what I'm saying?
Seven Lounge in Fairfield, Alabama. So, Lenny.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, Leslie is in Birmingham one Christmas
with my
weekend.
Aunt. And yeah. Pat lived there.
Ah.
I didn't know she had no ties to Birmingham. And this is how much of a comedian Leslie is. On some fearless, I don't care where I perform, any time, any place.
Yep.
She just wanted to go, hey, let's just go hang. Is there a mic? I'm like, Leslie, this is Birmingham on Christmas Eve. There is no comedy club open. But it just so happened to be one hood spot over in Fairfield. And it's literally, there's a shopping plaza, and you can Google Earth this shit.
Yeah.
It's on Aaron Aronoff Drive in front of the old Pizza Hut. There was a spot called the Seven Lounge. It was
yep.
the only open spot within that shopping plaza. Of so every other store is out of business.
Yep.
packed.
Seven Lounge holding a line out the door on Christmas Eve.
Wow.
Full of black people. And we're just going to watch stand-up.
Yep.
And then one of them come up to Leslie. Hey, you want to go on bless the people with a little bit of time? It'd be an honor to have. You know, she's not trying to perform, but right. You know, the comedian in you. Yeah, let me go on up there. She goes on stage. And it was raining the whole night. And it's fucking leaking.
On the
stage? Water's leaking on stage. And people are bringing buckets up. Why, she's mid-joke.
Man, I'm tearing these motherfuckers up, too. I'm tearing these motherfuckers up.
She roasted
up.
The room.
Roasted.
She didn't even do a joke. She just went up there and said, this shit raggedy. Good night.
Yo.
And they loved it.
Let me tell you, the one thing that I have learned about this game is that I think I might be a little crazy. Especially when it comes to the mic. I remember going to San Bernardino. I had a gig in San Bernardino. We got there and that nobody showed up. So the man paid me, but he was like, we ain't gonna have no show. Man, I got in the car. I was like, yo, let's drive around. Let's find somewhere to fucking go up. We found this karaoke club. I went up to the bar. I gave the lady $50. I said, listen, I was like, let me have some time. She was like, we don't do comments, like we doing karaoke. I was like, let me do some time. If I'm not funny, you can have this $50, right? Yo, went up and I fucking, when I say the dude that was with me, he was like, my balls went inside of me. He was like, you have taken, he was like, there, I have no balls now. He was like, what you just said? I went up, grabbed the mic, and when I say ripped that fucking club in half, I went back to the bar. That bitch gave me $50 and gave me $50 more and then bought us all drinks.
Wow.
She was like, anytime you ever want to go up. I was like, you got to be. And if I ever had a comedy contest, that would be one of the fucking things is that I would drop you in Arizona. Go get a set.
Show up and go up. Find someone.
Wow.
Create a microphone.
Because if you're really about your shit, you will do your shit. I have performed on the street. I have performed in the hallway. I have performed in barbershops, beauty shops. I have performed in churches. I have performed in halls. I have performed in actual hallways. I have performed, son.
So how does that translate then into the hosting? Like, what are the skill sets, Lenny and Leslie, that like from stand-up that roll naturally into being in that chair? Because there's a lot of the aspects of stand-up you mm-hmm. cannot use.
Yep.
You're yeah. Batman without the tool belt to a degree, low key.
Yeah.
When you're in the chair. So what tools from stand-up kind of translate?
I think the timing translates immediately. You know, she has a great ear for it, you know, time. And also she plays off the crowd well. You know, when you cut back from one of those packages and it's ridiculous, just her face. She's so expressive with her face. So you can get a laugh. You can get a laugh off your face. You can get a laugh off just waiting.
Yeah, because it's just not. It's not without the tool belt, though, Roy. If you got your face, like when I first started, I would do an hour of mirror time. It's some Lucille Ball shit. Watch Lucille Ball. Watch Cara Burnett. You know exactly what joke they're telling without them even talking. Cara Burnett could literally have you hollering for 15 minutes and not say a motherfucking word. That's face. That's mm-hmm. face. And then plus two, like, again, the world is in an obviousness now. This is what I told my friend the other day. I said, I feel like we're in the Matrix and they haven't updated us because the same stuff keeps rolling around and it doesn't seem like people are not understanding that this is the same thing.
The thing that I will say about that night at the Seven Lounge, like, it was a hood spot. It was it was ghetto as hell. But everybody who was there came to laugh, and yeah. they laughed. Every
yep.
comedian that was there was appreciative. And then I'd be damned if Leslie Jones did not stand out on that sidewalk on a rainy Birmingham night and chop it up with them comedians for an hour. Because comedians, and this is me being a comic from Birmingham, we don't get access to comedians like you at the level that you were. Because this is peak SNL at
yeah.
this point.
Yeah.
We don't get access to comics like you at that level. Where you are in the game, you're not even invited. You can't even get backstage at the comedy club in Birmingham to talk to somebody that's on your level. Mm-hmm. So that level of mentorship and just get the community, and I mean this, Les, comics still talk about it to this day. They still
Damn,
talk about
crazy.
That Christmas Eve at Seven Lounge. So when it was time for you to get advice for this show, and I know Chris Rock has kind of popped in and out. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what relationship you and Chris Rock have on some friendship shit. But I know professionally, he's always been somebody that's been a fan of your craft.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anybody you talked to outside of The Daily Show that helped you to prepare for what would happen once you were in the chair?
Well, you know, I did talk to Chris. Chris was one of the first people that I was like, how do I? And he was like, this is literally what he said. He was like, he just laughed. He goes, I never worry about you, dude. Like, I never worry about you. He was like, just be yourself. Don't try to be John. Don't try to be Trevor. Just be who you are. He was like, you'll be fine. He was like, I don't worry about you. And when you hear that, it just puts you, it's like, oh, how can I put this? Lauren could do that to me really good too. Lauren was good at that. Like, I love coaches. I love coach. I love coach talk. Like when I did my first update, man, I ripped that fucking, that dress show. Oh, homie, you think the fucking live was, the dress is always better than the live to me. The dress. Yeah,
for
was,
the people, SNL was, does a yeah, dress rehearsal at 9 o'clock.
Oh my God, I did that dress, that shit. Just, I'm talking about like fucking rattling. Motherfuckers was running through the building like, oh fuck, who is this bitch? Who is this bitch? Who is this bitch? Lauren called me in his office. He called me in his office because he knew that my fucking head, son, I was like, I didn't came in, I didn't found my motherfucking spot, bitches. You motherfuckers can't tell me shit, right? He called me in that office and he was like, I'm so glad that you did good doing the dress. Now do that shit live. Get the fuck out. Let me tell you something. I went in the hallway and I can't, it almost felt like I had on a uniform because I was like, all right, coach, let's do this shit. Let's fucking do this. You want a live, son? Let's go, motherfucker. Like, it was like you had just let me fucking, like, that's so, I like when he said that, it was just like, you're my star player. Go play. Like, that's gets me revved up. You know what I'm saying? And Lenny's good at it, too. Lenny's always just like, just do what you do, boss.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give her at the table, like, between the things. Like, she's asking me, what can I do? I'm like, just sometimes very little tweaks or, you know, whatever. But I'm not the Bobby Knight school of yelling at people. I'm more.
Lenny goes, too yelly. I like that. You yelling too much. Bring it down. Do this. Hey, like, that's the shit I like too.
Okay, but then how were you able to be in a place where you could accept criticism? Because that's a hard thing as a comedian. Because for the first 20 years of your shit,
absolutely,
it's just you. Are your writer. You are your editor. No one can tell you done because my jokes and my instincts got me to this point. And then here come this scrawny dude at the Comedy Cellar with a slice of pizza in his hand.
Nah, it's not like that. Honestly, if you're a real comic, and I'd say this to everybody that does this craft and even the old heads or whatever, if you're a real comic and you really love this craft, I mean, you do this craft. Like, I would do this craft even if they wasn't paying me, Roy. If it came down to the world and I'd be the world comic, like, not getting, I would fucking do it because that's how much I love comedy. And if you really love doing it, you always want to get better. So yeah, after 20 years, I was like, all right, I didn't wrote the joke every which way I could write it. Like, I make myself laugh, but shit, I want to make myself. I would see other comics and I would see the direction that they're going and I go, see, I'm not there yet. That's where I'm not. So I need someone else other than me to come in. Now, it wasn't about me not picking another black female or another. And no shade on black comics, but I do believe that we all kind of think of alike because I would get tags from them and they would be the same tags that I would have come up with. So when you have someone, and this is why I tell black comics all the time, you need to do white clubs. Go do the mainstream clubs because you're a different type of comic. You're going to give different tags to these white comics. These white comics are going to give different tags to you. They're going to give you different branches. So Lenny's a whole different person outside of my bubble that's gonna show me something that I'm not even seeing. So that's might be even way funnier. Like, oh shit, that's how you take it to the next level. So the way that I get to being able to take a critique is that because I wanna be so motherfucking good, and you cannot do that by yourself. Jesus. Until people understand to reach out to the motherfuckers that are going to help you until you make a try. You can't. There's no I in making it. Well, there is two eyes. But there's no there's no I in success, I should say that. You can't do that shit by yourself. I know you think you can, but you won't be the best. Like, I don't even want to say this, but whenever I see certain people and they post going, look what I did, woo, 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 whoop. And like, okay, well, who helped you do that? Like, yeah, like make it, I can't explain it. It's just like, we need to learn how to grow. And the only way to learn how to grow is to actually depend on someone else that could help you. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
But also, what she's saying now is so rare. You know this. Like, stand-up comedians, very lonely people. Not lonely, but they like to work alone. Yeah. You're your own writer, director, producer, everything.
And I struggle with that immensely.
Trusting people.
Yeah, trusting people, for sure.
Too. Look,
I totally
Rodney
get it.
Perry,
me too.
Rodney Perry would give me tags, and I would get mad at him. Like, because he would be like, that tag worked. Fuck you, nigga. I thought of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you go through that stage, but then you get to the stage of like, I want to see something else other than this joke.
To go outside, you most of the time you got to get some for somebody you respect. You know what I mean? If somebody says something to you, if Chris Rock wants to give you a line, you're gonna try that line the next time out, right? If Joe Schmo tries line, but you know what I always said? You should be open to anything. And believe me, if people have taken full advantage. I've had open micers give me lines. You know what I mean? Like, thank you very much. You know what I mean? It's like, and you just have to be nice about it. But she is so open in a different way to me. And I've had a lot to give out there, and nobody tapped into it for all those years. And she's like, why? What is going on?
She did it, and it's been successful.
So points for Leslie.
The podcast is the fuckery. And what y'all do on the fuck, we're going to end a little silly.
Well,
you all talk about a lot of different current events, and it's actually a really good podcast because it gives a really good window into the dynamic of you two, but also politically how you two tend to see the world and current events. So we're going to do a little couple of fuckeries of the week here.
Let's do it.
We doing fuckery of the week here?
Well, we just,
quick ones.
Like a crossover episode, like Chicago Fire, Chicago PD.
Okay.
First up, Rihanna's halftime performance.
First of all, I'm just going to say.
You went in on Stephen A. Smith for saying Rihanna wasn't Beyonce.
But Rihanna was wonderful. I still wouldn't say what Stephen A. Smith said. I still wouldn't say that. But I was surprised that she was pregnant because she had just had the baby. So I thought the baby was like 2 months old. And I was like, oh, wow, is she getting rid of the baby fat or something like that? But then she whole pregnant. And then all of the little white dudes in the white suits looked like
sperms. Yeah, the backup dancers. That was the thing.
Like
that was
sperms.
The whole point of it.
Yeah. Somebody, she meant to do that.
Somebody broke it down and they said that Rihanna's performance, if you look, she's walking out in the red with all of the background dancers looking like sperm. And by the end of the performance, she is alone away from the sperm. And we see clearly that she has the seed in her. So the entire performance, she got impregnated.
Okay.
Which means...
okay.
Which means somebody went raw dog in the stadium.
Exactly. Busted a nut in the middle of the fucking...
But not only that... I don't know. My thing on that is like multiple billions of points for shit I would never do. Okay.
Yeah, true. They
raised her. How high is she?
Yeah, she was way high in the air.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like if you just said, you know what? She can't be here right now. Can you just step in? I'd be like, oh, thanks.
No, I mean, because they kept raising her, and I was like, oh, my God, that's the reason she's not moving, because she's up in the fucking hair. She's going to fall.
And Leslie and I talk about this all the time. Both of us would fall off that platform. I don't know how it would happen.
They would have to chain wrap me to that motherfucker for me not to fucking
wrestlers
fall.
Wrestlers have died from half that height.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. I'd be like, get me out of here. Umbrella, get me out of here.
I'd be like, ooh, blah. Look at what you got.
Last fuckery of the week. What say you, since y'all missed this topic on the show because it came up in the news cycle after your week had come and gone, old Ron DeSantis putting an end to African-American AP history courses during Black History Month. Mind you, he's trying to get rid of is to stop the wokeness. They have a Stop Woke Act.
Well,
anything that make white people feel bad, we got to make that shit illegal and outlawed.
That's what it fucking is starting to feel like. It's just like your obviousness, your obvious racism is just so disgusting. It's fucking disgusting. So you don't need to learn this. What we don't need to learn while fucking little white kids is still going around calling kids nigga in school, like that shit's still going on. Like, I'm telling you that Malcolm X and Martin Luther King literally can walk into this world and not see a motherfucking difference. So you fucking tell me that, like, you used to be a history teacher? You are fucking racist. You are a racist. You are a motherfucking racist. And please announce this shit while he's doing a speech. You are a fucking racist, Ron DeShittos. You are a motherfucking racist.
I'm not following that. Ditto.
Okay.
You know?
Well, the podcast is the fuckery. Available.
I'm sick of this shit.
By the way, we'll
I'm
be in Florida for two shows in about a month.
Man, fuck Florida. Y'all motherfuckers need to just float the fuck off into the fucking water. Yeah. Like, fuck y'all,
but,
man.
But after we perform. So we'll be in Tampa and St. Petersburg.
Come get that fucking smoke. Come get the smoke.
To be fair, DeSantis only won Florida by like 2 points. There's a lot of good people in Florida.
No, but you know what?
Insane.
And that's what makes me mad, though.
Yes.
That there are a lot of good people. There's a lot of good people in this whole fucking United States of America that don't believe in half the shit that's being done. But you fucking lazy.
Go vote. Sit
your fucking ass, your complacent fucking ass, and think that motherfuckers is going to straighten shit out for you. Get up off your ass, because we are the motherfucking people. We are the motherfucking people. If you're paying fucking income tax and you're not voting, you's a dumbass motherfucker. I said it.
That sounds like a political campaign. You a dumbass motherfucker. Leslie will be running for president.
I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. They need to be told straight out how you pay taxes and not vote. What kind of, that don't make you smart. That make you a fucking idiot.
Wait, one more.
I'm sorry.
One more.
It happened.
No, you on the flow. I'm letting you flow. I know when to be quiet.
Oh, please.
Last one.
Welcome to my world, Roy.
Chinese spy balloons, fair or foul?
How dumb are we? How fucking stupid are we? Let me tell you something. Ronald Reagan, President Carter would have shot the shit out. They would have shot it with their own shotgun. They would have went out there with their own fucking hunting gun and shot that fucking balloon down. How fucking dumb are you? Do you know how many countries think that we are fucking complete idiots? Oh, it's just a balloon. It's not doing nothing.
Yeah, and they're mad at us now. Like the girlfriend, like, they're gaslighting us. They're gaslighting us.
Yeah,
like
China said they want their balloon back.
Yeah, we want the balloon.
They're sending back to them. Send it in the pieces and send some bullets that's inside of that motherfucker. Yeah. Don't listen. I couldn't be the president. I'm telling you right now. Yo, let me tell y'all motherfuckers something.
China,
you
sent another goddamn balloon over here.
You seen another balloon over this motherfucker? See what the fuck happened? Yeah. You see what the fuck happened?
They've been shooting them down now. Apparently now there's just an influx of a bunch of unidentified flying, whatever the
hell. And then how are we not smart enough to know that these motherfuckers, listen, and I'm not trying to be racist or anything, but the best technology comes out of fucking China, like the best cameras, all that shit. You think they can't build a goddamn camera balloon?
It's bizarre. They're shaped like fortune cookies, so it's really obvious,
you know what?
Right?
Oh, see, okay, just cut that out.
Okay, China, that was
what is racist
that
about
Lenny
that?
Marcus, please don't come and ban me, China.
Please do
we'll
not.
We'll be in Florida May 11th and 12th.
Leslie, straighten the fuck up real quick. Okay?
Yeah, don't.
Leslie was talking all that shit.
That wasn't appropriate for him to say, and I do not back up that joke at all.
Yo, when I say I love y'all, I mean,
man, Roy, you are fucking the best, man. That's so funny that you've been through my life periodically and just great.
Yo, we used to, Leslie and I used to live in the same apartment complex.
Oh my God, in Harlem, huh?
No, Sherman Way.
That's right,
Sherman Way.
I think I maybe saw you twice. Is you still with that girl?
No, it's been like,
yeah, I didn't think that was gonna last. No, I didn't think that was gonna last at all. I saw y'all in the elevator once, and I was like, "Damn, that nigga looked like a prisoner."
Okay, and now it's time to go. Now it's time to go. That was a LA situation. See, now you're telling my business. Telemotherfucking business.
Oh my God.
The podcast is The Fuckery. Catch Leslie Jones and Lenny Marcus on tour. It is one of the best stand-up shows out there right now.
Thank you.
Leslie, Lenny, thank you for going beyond the scenes.
Anytime,
thank
you. Roy, we love you.
Thank you for taking us beyond the scenes, yep. Baby.
And to that girl in Los Angeles, Leslie said that, not me. We still cool.
I ain't trying to fuck up nobody's ass, man. You know, girl. You know what he probably was fucking up. That's probably why he, you know.
I was fucking up. I will on that.
Just that's play probably the why theme she music. Had that look on
stop
me.
Talking. They playing the music. Listen to The Daily Show Beyond the Scenes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Explore more shows from The Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Jump into the epic world of Avatar: The Last Airbender
with Nickelodeon's official companion podcast, Avatar: Brave and the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Listen to Avatar: Brave and the Elements on Apple Podcasts
or wherever you get your podcasts.